Globally, there's 1 billion disabled people, and they are one of the communities that are disproportionately affected by climate change. The situations do have to be resolved.
Hello there, welcome to another Music Ally Focus. I'm Music Ally's editor, Joe Sparrow, and in this episode, I'm joined by Suzanne Bull, the founder of Attitude is Everything, which is an organization that connects disabled people with music and live event industries to improve access for them, and Dr. Theresa Moore, who's director at A Greener Future, the not-for-profit company which helps organizations, events, festivals, and venues to be more environmentally sustainable. We spoke to them about how the twin issues of sustainability at festivals and access for people with disabilities connect, and how they're opening up a conversation about how the sustainability challenge can incorporate those needs too. All of that in 1 minute. Now, if you're not familiar with the Music Ally Focus podcast, we take one issue at a time and look at it in depth and quickly, which means this podcast should be fast. It should take about the same amount of time as Anharadi Mandal from India could hypothetically extinguish 750 candles with a pigtail. That is a plaited ponytail. Anuradha extinguished 26 candles in 1 minute in India in 2011. Now, talking of illumination, the place where disabled access and environmental sustainability meet hasn't had a lot of light shined on it until recently, despite the live music industry taking steps to improve both of those individual issues. Suzanne and Theresa are aiming to change that. So we spoke about the toolkit that the two organizations have put together, which is designed to help festival and live event organizations make their sustainability actions work in step with their accessibility goals. We chatted about the challenges that disabled people face in the face of climate change related actions. For instance, they often need to use a lot of single-use plastics, and they have differing hygiene needs to keep in mind when eco-friendly compost toilets are being created. We also talked about if you, yes, you, are interested in making a difference, how you can take simple steps and what you can do to make effective progress to sustainable accessibility. Let's go and talk to them right now. So I'm very happy to welcome Suzanne Bull, Attitude is Everything's founder, and Dr. Theresa Moore, director at A Greener Future, to the podcast. Hello, Suzanne and Theresa.
Hello, thanks for having us.
Thanks for joining us. We've got a lot to get into here, but at the very start, can we get a bit of context of who you are and what you do at your respective organisations, please? Let's start with you, Dr. Theresa Moore.
Oh, okay. So, I'm director at A Greener Future, and our sort of core business is certification of events. So we help events to become more sustainable through our certification process. We've been going for nearly 18 years now, and we really pioneered certification, firstly music events, but now we look at all sorts of different types of events, from cultural to sporting to food, you name it. We also work with arenas, big arenas, so the O2, the Hydro in Glasgow, NEC, you know, a lot of different arenas now, which has been a more recent development. We also work with touring, supply chain, and this sort of more holistic approach that we've adopted in the last few years.
And Suzanne?
So I'm the founder of Attitude is Everything, and I founded it as a pilot program 24 years ago, and it was only meant to last for 1 year. And now look at us 24 years later as our own charitable organisation. And what we do is we connect disabled people with the music and live events industries to improve access together. So that's basically what we do. We also have several programmes that we run, and one of them is our live events access charter. And we've got over 200 venues and festivals and events that have signed up to our charter, and they improve access with all their facilities. They train their staff. They improve facilities for audiences, also artists. and anybody working there, anybody coming from a touring company to work there. And they have like four different levels that they can reach. So much like a greener future, it's about certification as well. So we have the bronze, silver, gold and platinum awards.
How do you end up working together? And what are your positions on sustainability and accessibility?
Basically, during lockdown, I was watching quite a lot of things unfold. And what I was watching was climate change solutions unfold. But I realised that disabled people weren't being included in the conversation. And that was mainly because we weren't visible and out on the streets. A lot of disabled people were immediately put into the vulnerable category, like myself, and we had to stay home like all the time. I know everybody had to stay home, I appreciate that, but the disabled community had to stay home for like much longer. And I could see all these things happening, and I could see that sustainability solutions and access solutions were being sort of in a way pitted against one another and opposed. There were all these opposing opinions, you know, how it all unfolds over social media. And I thought, well, I don't think that we can carry on that way, because the thing is that disabled people should be part of the climate change discussion. But I kind of, when I got back to work, I contacted Julie's Bicycle and also A Greener Future to ask them if they were interested in doing a collaborative program. And I'd already got some investment from Arts Council England to do a 3-year program looking at whether we can make access solutions at live events also sustainable and vice versa. And they were both very, very keen to do that, because they just felt that, you know, we shouldn't ever be leaving anyone behind.
Just to go to your point there about how you felt that two topics of sustainability and accessibility were being pitted against each other. Can you expand on that a little bit for some context? Do you mean that people were going down one path or the other in terms of their efforts in that space, or...?
Yeah, I think largely that's what was happening. But also there are disabled people that are very active in the climate change debate. But I felt their voices were being drowned out by all the voices that kept focusing on sort of like the problems that disabled people cause, because they drive everywhere, because, you know, they use plastic straws and they use a lot of single disposable things. And, you know, there are many communities, not just the disabled people, that have these things like thrown at them. And I felt that it was becoming quite hostile, to be honest. And that's really why I wanted to do something. And there is something important that the three of organisations have come together and said and put into the toolkit, that sometimes there might not be a solution, a complete solution to this, but whatever happens, disabled people shouldn't be named or shamed within this debate.
And we're talking again about this sort of hybrid challenge of accessibility and the people who face accessibility problems and green and environmentally sustainable solutions as well. So how do you start uniting those two issues? Obviously this toolkit is one way, right? But how do you bring those two conversations together?
So what we did was we talked about how we could get three festivals together to do some case studies. And then Julie's Bicycle, informed by kind of like Attitude Is Everything's questions that we wanted to ask, we kind of came up with a public survey, because we couldn't really embark upon this until we really found out how everybody felt. So first of all, we did a public survey with disabled people, whether they were audiences, artists or working in the industry. And that took place over the summer months. And then at the end of the summer, we held two round tables, or Julie's Bicycle held them, and put sort of disabled people and festival events. And we also held a venues round table together to discuss the issues and to see what we could pull out. And we did base what we asked at the round table on what the research showed us. I think the most important thing that the research showed us was that disabled people want to be in the climate change debate, and they want to do things that will actively support and help the environment, but they kind of just don't know where to start. Or one revealing thing was about they didn't understand what was being asked of them, because some of the time, like, whereas access information is always practical because people have to make an informed decision about whether they're going to buy a ticket or where they're going to go, they need to make sure that their access requirements are going to be met. The language of sustainability can be quite complicated. There's also a lot of jargon, and it's also like more like sometimes veering into marketing and aspirational. So that's what it was as well. Globally, there's 1 billion disabled people, and they are one of the communities that are disproportionately affected by climate change. They are twice to three times more likely to die in disasters because there isn't any provision made for them, things like pandemics, etc. And the other thing is that they find it harder to kind of be evacuated, like it's much harder for them to leave their house, much harder for them to live in changing weather temperatures. So whether we did a program together or not, it doesn't matter. The situations do have to be resolved.
What happened during lockdown, again, in the sustainability world, we started to realise that actually the approach to sustainability, certainly within the music sphere, had been quite siloed. So, you know, events were sort of festivals, music festivals had their little silo, arenas had their little silo, artists were doing something or not over here, suppliers were doing something there. So in a way, the start of a change in approach to sustainability through organisations like Live Green, for example, during COVID was to bring things together. So we started to take a more holistic view of the industry and the actions and how they affected each part of the industry. It wasn't enough just to be doing something to make festivals greener. We had to look at the whole industry. And I think, you know, joining forces with Access is Everything on this issue of disability and accessibility is actually a part of that. You know, it's that awakening that we see there is a bigger picture. And there are more, you know, actors who have to be included in this, which is really what attracted me to this project in the first place.
That brings around this concept of the toolkit really nicely, doesn't it? Because, Suzanne, you were saying people didn't know what to do. And this is a common common thing I hear from people. Whatever the things they want to change are, whatever area of society or the industry it's in, they say, I just don't know where to start. So this toolkit is where you've ended up. What is the toolkit and what are the key messages from it and what does it help people
do? Yes, and now we home back into the detail because it's important that those big ideas become practice, and the toolkit, as you say, is the perfect way of doing that. So a toolkit is a series of identifying what the issues are and then providing some practical solutions. And of course, we don't have all the solutions because the work has only just started. But it was important to, through the roundtable, through the research, to actually map out exactly what we think the issues are at this point in time. You know, we may discover more things in the future. So working with groups, that forms the basis of the toolkit. So, you know, whether it's things like
And what are those main issues did you
so I mean it's across all the impacts. You know, if we're looking at waste, there are issues to do with you know, as an event advisor, we are always trying to recommend how to reduce the amount of waste, but there are specific issues to do with disability, for example medical waste, which contains quite a lot of plastic, and we're trying to reduce plastic across the board at events, which, you know, we hadn't thought about. And so here's the issue. At the moment, there aren't that many solutions, but at least we've mapped out the issue. so that people can start recognize that it is an issue and start working on those solutions. Very detailed things. We look at, in the world of sustainability, at outdoor festivals in particular, water usage. How do we become more efficient with the way we use water? How do we avoid, you know, the plastic water bottle, for example? And a very small issue is stop taps. So increasingly events will provide stop taps where you can get water, fill your water bottle. Those stop taps run for too short a period for most disabled people. You know, they switch off. Right. This is a small but important detail. So, you know, it makes it difficult for disabled people to actually get the water because the tap switches off. It stays on for too short a period. Toilets, you know, we recommend more sustainable toilets. Let's move away from those awful chemical toilets that smell nasty anyway, towards something like compost toilets. But the supply chain doesn't have many, if any, which are wheelchair accessible. So, you know, again, it's recognizing this is an issue. If you want to move towards compost toilets, we need to improve the supply chain so that there are accessible compost toilets for wheelchairs. And currently there's very little. And I could go on, you know, it's looking at the detail which we normally look at as when we carry out our assessments and having to think about, well, okay, that's a great sustainable solution, but does it work for the disabled? Very often it doesn't. We need to look more.
Yeah, people working in sustainability or working in festival environments to make them more sustainable, it's about expanding that vision a bit and saying, hey, don't forget there are all these other needs as well that you may not have calculated as you shift across to this way of thinking. From your perspective, what were you able to put into this toolkit and bring to it?
I think the fact that these important statistics that head up the toolkit, like 68% of respondents said sustainability, these are the disabled respondents, is a consideration when choosing which festivals to go to. That's a really high amount. But 46% of that same group felt excluded from participating from environmental efforts and festivals. And then you had the 34% that feel that environmental solutions aren't easy to navigate and actually don't meet their access needs to all of the extent or some of the extent. And then 46% felt excluded and unable to participate in events and festivals that align with their own climate values. So actually they felt like left out of the community. But also I think the main challenges were there were some themes that came through and some themes I think where we need help from the wider kind of industry and kind of local authority and government that feed into this. So obviously, like the main, I've spoken already about the language, but I also want to speak about travel and transport because that has one of the biggest carbon footprints. But the amount of kind of like accessible like transport that's also electric is kind of almost zero. And it's really, really difficult. And also when you have that kind of transport, often there's only a few suppliers that might do it, but also there might just be like one wheelchair space on the bus or something like that. So there's that to take into consideration. Also, like Therese brought up, the supply chain issue is really, really difficult. So what we found out from the case studies, there's a lot of people creating solutions themselves. So they're building their own compost toilets. They're finding ways in which to do that. And what they're doing when they're finding their accessible ways, they're putting their access and sustainability teams together. Or sometimes if it's a really small festival event, the access person also does the sustainability stuff. So there's more of a cross-sector discussion going on. So I think that that's really important. But what we really need to do is get together with the member associations, the trade associations, and also the local authorities to press upon them that there is a supply chain issue with green kind of solutions that are also accessible, and also about the transport links as well, and the amount of accessible and sustainable transport. So I think that's really important. And one of the solutions was that people got together and they created like a local equipment store, maybe in a local authority or a regional authority, of accessible equipment that festivals and kind of events could share. Mm.
Right.
And I think that's really important because one person said, well, I hired all these accessible toilets, I was going to hire them, but she said, they were from so far away that was kind of like creating a carbon issue.
Right. Yeah.
Reduction issue.
Yeah.
So because with any of this equipment, whether it's sustainable or accessible, there's only a very few suppliers. So that's how she came to build her own set of compostable toilets. But she also put alongside that accessible toilets that could be sanitized and that could be kept very clean. Because I think it's important to say that there will be disabled people who need totally sanitized kind of areas, and it might be more difficult to do that in some kind of areas. There are some challenges, so it's not like throwing the baby out with the bathwater, so to speak. It's about trying to provide a range of things if we can, you know. And I think that's important as well. And the other thing obviously is involving disabled people in the planning from the start, looks like you would with access. You know, that's the best way in which you can do that, really.
So how can people, you've outlined what's in this report, how can people use it? Like, what they can download, I'll put the link to it below the podcast. Of course, people can download it who are listening, and they can look at it for themselves. But what can they actually do in terms of taking what's in it and fitting it into their planning now as they start to sort of progress into that season?
Well, I think the case studies are really, really important to follow, because they're like the three practical examples of what three festivals and Teresa and A Greener Future worked on, that as to what people can do, because they're live, like active examples. And then the rest of the things are just kind of like, by talking through the roundtables, talking through what people like could do. So they could take the toolkit and they could experiment with a few things. But what we're very much pitching this is the start of the conversation, not the end of it. And really what we're asking people is to be creative around it and get together and design some solutions. So it's about getting people to just try out a few things from the toolkit, see how you get on, feedback and tell us like three things that you might have done or changed. Equally, tell us what did go wrong. And then kind of like what we're going to do in the future is that people like report back by September, and then we're going to produce like version 2 of the toolkit round about February 2025. And I think that's important. And the third pledge is about coming together, disabled people in the industry, colleagues and suppliers to co-create things. And I think that's really important. One of the ways in which we're doing it, I'm actually introducing the toolkit to all of the venues that are signed up to our charter on Wednesday, and talking them through it. So we'll create a form in which people can feed. It'll be part of their action planning feeding back process that they do as being on part of the charter anyway. And then in April, I'll be talking to the charter festivals about it as well, because they all have action plans that they need to do. So we'll just include a few simple questions in those action plans, just to, from the get-go, that people know, you know, don't just forget about it. This is something we're all committed to doing. And I've had lots of people coming to me, and some of our board have as well, people that wouldn't normally talk about access and sustainability in the same conversation.
There's a huge amount of buzz and excitement around this, partly because, you know, in a way it's so simple and obvious, but in another way, nobody's thought about it before. And, and the strength of the toolkit, I think, is that it really maps out what those issues are. So people know, you know, there is a problem once they start thinking about it. But now those issues are identified and mapped out from both sides, if you like, of the coin between sustainability and accessibility. So people can dip in and sort of recognise that, that's an issue I've been trying to deal with for ages, and there it is, and here are some solutions, or here are some events, you know, attempting to solve this. The other thing I think is that, you know, we have our sort of groups that we work with on a regular basis, but I think the toolkit really sort of puts it out there into a much bigger arena. So I think, you know, that organizations that aren't necessarily working with either of us now recognize that this is a big issue.
You know, you mentioned that people are building their own sustainable toilets. You know, can they request those designs and then go and build their own and share the skills at that kind of level as well?
Yeah, that's what we want to happen. I mean, certainly Harry Jones from Forwards Festival was on one of the panel, and she's sort of like, I can make myself available to like support and help. So there'll be a way of disseminating ideas and sharing kind of like developments and plans. But I also think that sort of could lead us into year two of the programme, which we haven't discussed yet. We will in April. But it will be like, if you look at the next things that really we could do in the year two programme, it's trying to like facilitating people to come together for co-design and the supply chain, as well as version two of the toolkit and people trying it out and tell us what worked and what didn't work. I feel sure that because of the industries that we work in, that there are going to be some very, very creative ideas out there. And I also think that sort of like certainly disabled people, certainly us as an organisation, and certainly some of the, you know, the ways in which the events industry has been really, really hit in financial hardship. I'm sure that, you know, there'll be ways in which people can do this on a low budget. And that's what I would encourage.
Yeah. What sort of feedback are you getting from within the community of people who are taking this toolkit and trying things out? I know it's only just been published fairly recently, but are you getting any immediate feedback from them?
The feedback I've had is thank God you've done this, actually. Oh my God, this is brilliant. Oh, I've been wondering about this myself. Oh yeah, I can see now. And from disabled people who were on the round table and I sent it to them, they're like, oh, thanks so much for enabling me to be part of this. I've got loads of ideas. So that's what it's like at the moment. It should be really good.
From a sustainability point of view, I think it's opened people's eyes. You know, that again, talking about that sort of siloed approach, you know, this is one where just never thought about it. I personally have learned a huge amount, both about disability and access issues, but, you know, thinking about the minutiae again, God, you know, we've been recommending all sorts of different approaches, but we haven't even thought about, you know, what impact this would have or whether it works for people with disability. So, you know, that I think it has been very eye-opening, and everybody I've talked to about this, as I said, were very excited, but also feel they've learned a huge amount just going through this toolkit.
I learned a lot as well, because I never, ever knew anything about sustainability, ever. And because of the debate, I was kind of a little bit like, oh, I don't know how, if I can cope or handle this, do you know what I mean? And I thought, me being me, which is why I started Attitude Is Everything, really, is to think, well, I'm a disabled person, I love music, I don't understand why I'm left out of it. It comes from the same sort of place. Surely surely some people have got solutions to this, but I had to learn an awful lot about sustainability and about climate change, about how what groups of people were affected, and I learned that sort of over 2 years, and I'm constantly like learning more and more, and I, you know, I'm so glad I got the opportunity to learn a new skill, you know, in my career.
As you said, it's the nature of progress, isn't it, that you have to focus in on one thing and then bring them together to bring bigger progress, don't you? And for people who are listening and thinking, yeah, I've never thought about that either, I want to do something about it, of course they should go and use the toolkit and read what's in it, but what sort of practical changes can they start to make to ensure that progress sticks as they move forward?
I think it's about I think the first place always starts with information. And I think really considering the information, why are you writing that about sustainability? Do people really understand it? And is it practical? You know, and is it written like access information? Like, do people really understand what that, I don't know, in one of the things that came back, it said, we've got an HVO. And I said to Farah at Judy's Bicycle, what's an HVO? And she said, oh, it's this particular thing. And I was like, oh, right, okay. So that's an example of how language can alienate people. So think about where you're placing the sustainability language and your access information. And if there are points where they can come together and say, we've done it like this because an arena will put a levy on car parking and that levy will be used for sustainable practice. But a disabled person might say, oh, I've got no other option but to drive and I haven't got an electric car. So do I feel welcome at that gig or that arena? How do I play my part? I don't want to feel guilty about it. So it could be that the arena chat says actually for disabled people, which a lot of them are doing, they don't have that levy. If they have blue badge access or they need an accessible parking space. The other thing is start small, see what's out there already, and try a few things. I think the case studies, I know I keep going back to them, the festivals, they give you a good idea of what people have done and the things that those people grappled with. And sometimes they've got solutions, but they've been honest about saying, well, we haven't got quite there yet. But someone might read that and go, actually, I had a solution to that.
And Teresa, what's your sort of go-to advice there for someone who wants to get started and make things happen?
Look at the toolkit, look at the case studies, look at who's been involved, contact either ourselves or AIE, because it is about, you know, putting people in touch with each other. And that's how A Greener Future has always operated, actually, where we've seen a solution in one place and we're aware that somebody else has a similar problem but is struggling. We've always tried to put people in touch with each other so they can share ideas. And I think that's really important because often there are solutions out there that, you know, we just don't know about. And, you know, again, it's also sustainability teams understanding that if they're not already, they should be working much more closely with the teams working on accessibility. So in a way that sort of, you know, suddenly brings those two groups together.
Yes. Well, I will put the links and those pledges to the toolkit beneath the podcast and people can do exactly what you just said and test it out and have a look. One quick question then before we finish, and we've talked about things around music, but let's talk about music really, really quickly. For both of you, and this is a difficult question, but if you could only pick one piece of music to listen to forever, what would it be?
Do you know, it's really easy for me because I love The Cure.
Oh, okay.
I love everything about them. Although I would probably say The Head on the Door because that's the first one I ever got. So that's easy for me.
It's not so easy. Mine is a very eclectic taste. So I'm listening to some North African music at the moment. But I guess I've gone back to that album, Street Fighting Years, for some reason. I don't know. Maybe it's the global context we're in, but it's sort of... It's, you know, it's about not being put down. It's about standing up for your values and fighting back. So I don't know.
There you go. That's what music's for. Times like this.
It is. Yeah.
Great. I'll put links to both of those beneath the podcast. Suzanne, Teresa, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Bye for now.
All right, there we go. If you found that useful, please share this podcast on with someone else who you think will get something out of it. And don't forget, of course, the links to all the things we talked about are right next to this podcast. If you'd like to get in touch with me, I would love to hear from you. You can email me on joe@musically.com. We also have a free weekly email called The Knowledge, which rounds up bits and pieces of the best analysis news, marketing insight and skills which emerge from Music Ally's wide range of sources. So sign up and impress your friends. Thank you for listening. As ever, I've been Joe Sparrow. You have been you. And until next time, farewell.